This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. When children are living in poverty, it can have long-term consequences for their health and their education. The Annie E. Casey Foundation released the latest Kids Count report this week. It tracks several indicators about the well-being of children across the country and says some conditions are indeed improving, but the number of children living in poverty in North Carolina has actually risen to more than 1 in 4. We're going to take a closer look at the numbers and what they mean in just a bit. But first, Casey Blake is here. She's a reporter for the Asheville Citizen-Times. She wrote stories for a series the paper did on poverty and youth homelessness, and she joins us from WCQS in Asheville. Welcome, Casey.
Thanks, Frank.
Casey, tell us a little bit about, you wrote about the Hopkins family in Western North Carolina. Tell us about them and how they became homeless.
Yes, we actually followed two families, and the Hopkins family was sort of the family to illustrate this idea of doubled up, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But Shane Hopkins was 5 years ago living with his three children in, you know, a beautiful four-bedroom home, living very comfortably, you know, just kind of classic middle-class family, and fell pretty quickly into poverty after several layoffs, the sudden loss of his wife. And, you know, were evicted, developed, you know, some serious sort of credit issues. And, you know, that's illustrative, I think, of a lot of the families we're seeing who are falling into poverty very quickly here in the last few years.
Yeah, and I think that does, I do want to stop right there and point to the fact that it is so much easier now to fall into homelessness from a condition of relative stability and almost middle class, middle class status. It doesn't take much to plunge a family into homelessness. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the striking things about talking with Shane was that he had a hard time sort of using this word homeless. He said, you know, often how strange it was to be, you know, even using that word. And the first time we met with him, he brought me a few copies of Wall Street Journal articles and New York Times articles that he'd read. I think the New York Times was the last subscription that he gave up, you know, even after their phone line. So, strange to see someone, you know, so well informed and living that really comfortable middle-class lifestyle.
Well, and both of those papers and more, including yours, have reported on the number of families who have found themselves in just their condition. But let's talk about something else that happened. Their children fell into a gray area when it came to what they received from social services, right? Tell us about that.
Right. So, yeah, a big focus with us were these two sort of competing definitions of homelessness. So the schools, including the county school system that we worked with, operate off of the Department of Education's definition, which includes families living with other families in a home, like Shane's family. They were sharing a double wide with another family of three. HUD standards, so, you know, the standards by which city and county officials are primarily operating, do not include that demographic, which is roughly 78% of families in Buncombe County. So obviously a huge portion.
78% of there'd be 78% more considered homeless under the education department standard is what you're saying?
Exactly.
So and how common is their situation in Western North Carolina, would you say?
Well, so there are 78% of, you know, all of the students who have been identified, and between the county school district and the city, so that's just Buncombe County and Asheville City Schools, that's more than 750 kids. And that's total, you know, including sort of HUD homeless and non-HUD homeless.
Well, and it turns out that the situation, if you want to graph this situation, is getting worse and not better. And for proof of that, we turn to Layla Bell, who's a research director at NC Child, which is a group that helped compile child well-being data for the Annie E. Casey Foundation. Layla, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Frank.
Tell us a little bit about what's happening in North Carolina and what the latest report shows about child poverty in North Carolina.
Well, the Kids Count data book measures 16 indicators of child well-being across four categories: economic well-being, education, health, family, and community. And we found that North Carolina ranks 34th in overall child well-being, so it really does place us in the bottom tier in terms of outcomes for our children, as well as the opportunity to thrive and succeed for our children. When we dig a little deeper, we see that we fall really at the back of the pack for economic well-being, and a lot of that is driven by an increase in child poverty. In fact, the child poverty rate in North Carolina increased by 24% since 2005. And we know that poverty is a significant challenge for children, and it's correlated with a whole host of other outcomes for children.
Let's talk about the standards that we're using. I mean, you heard Casey say we've got these two standards to judge, to define a family as homeless. But when you talk about economic well-being, what is it that you're looking at? Why would the education department be interested in families that are sharing homes or have any kind of domestic instability when it comes to their roof? What's the impact on children?
The impact is significant in terms of children's cognitive development, their readiness to start school, their access to healthy foods in their communities, and even the safety of the communities in which they live. So the report looks at a number of different measures to really create a sophisticated picture of the economic well-being of children and their families. So in addition to the percent of children that are living in poverty, we also take a look at the percent of children who are living in households with a high housing cost burden. So those are children that are living in families that spend more than 30% of their income really on their housing cost. And we know that low-income families are much more vulnerable for housing instability when they have such a high cost in terms of maintaining adequate housing for their kids. It also looks at the percent of children whose parents lack secure employment. So those are children who are in households where their parents don't have full-time, year-round work, which is really essential in terms of the economic well-being of a family. And as Casey mentioned earlier, the experience of unemployment can have devastating consequences for children. We know in the state more than a third of our children live in homes where their parents don't have secure employment. And when we look at other analysis, we realize that it really matters for kids in North Carolina because more than half of those kids have parents who've been unemployed or looking for work for more than 6 months. Those are long-term unemployed families, which means they don't have the financial resources or they're struggling with the financial resources to really meet their children's needs.
I want to bring Ryan Furman into the conversation now. He's the executive director of Genesis Home in Durham, and which supports families with homeless children. Ryan, welcome to the program. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about when a family comes to Genesis Home in Durham, what are some of the struggles? What are they facing?
So the vast majority of the folks that present at Genesis Home are unemployed or underemployed. A lot of folks in the community don't realize that you can work full time at a minimum wage job, and that's really roughly $1,000 a month, which given our fair market rents in this part of the state, that's just not enough money to get by. And so another typical dynamic for our families is that it's a single head of household, typically a single female head of household, so you don't have that second income coming in, which can bring additional stability. So disabling conditions like mental health, substance abuse, untreated physical health conditions, those are all very common in the families that we see.
How often do you see families coming to you because they have, maybe by HUD's definition, they're not homeless. They've had a roof, but they've had to leave. They might have been living with a family, another family. They get thrown out after a while. You can't stay there that long. You might find another house, but you're sharing couches with people all over the city.
That is very, very common. So about 60% of the families that come to Genesis Home are coming from a double-up situation. Families are, I think, more of a kind of a sympathetic population in the community, so it's much more likely that a friend or family member might let someone stay on a couch or in a guest room for whatnot for a period of time until they, ask people to leave. So we have to document that there is an informal eviction in place where the owner of the apartment or home says, you have got to go, and we have to get that in writing to comply with HUD's standards for homeless eligibility.
So what's the impact on kids? How do you see this playing out in their lives?
All of the recent research is very clear in that homelessness is traumatic for children, and that many of these young people have moved around very frequently. They've switched schools. They've had much more likely to have extended absences. And so I think that once these folks, young people, get in the school system, they're oftentimes the ones that are kind of on the bottom of the achievement gap. And we are learning more and more, going to preschool age children, that gap is very likely in place before they even walk in the door at kindergarten.
And there, and I understand there's certainly a stigma once people find out, and they can find out pretty easily if they're, particularly if they're, going home to a place like Genesis Home, right?
That's right. So, for the younger children at Genesis Home, many of them, are completely unaware that it's even a homeless shelter, and they've got a lot of other, young people there they can be friends with. As these young people get older, we see that the it's very common for the young people to be, angry. They've internalized a lot of the frustration. They can be very upset with their parents. And that it's very common for these young people to be teased or bullied on the school bus. And, we were just talking about this as a staff at Genesis Home this week, that we have got several of our young people that don't want to go to summer camp here at Durham Public Schools because they feel like they're being bullied on the bus.
And they come back, and because they all get dropped off there and everybody sees it. Casey Blake at the Asheville Citizen-Times, again, getting back to some of your reporting. Interestingly enough, you found that while homeless children in Buncombe County, that number is growing, the actual number of homeless adults is decreasing. Why is that?
Well, I think HUD set out several years ago tackling chronic homelessness as a priority. And I think, that was the right thing to do at the time. Those were the numbers that were growing. And, that's been really effective. I think Ryan highlighted, the way that families become homeless is very different. Folks will exhaust every option to keep their kids off the streets. They will have them sleep on relatives' couches, go into sort of deep credit holes, maybe, a lot more readily than single individuals. So, families are really that lagging indicator, and whereas they may have been hit equally hard, if not harder, by the recession, they're, showing up later as homeless because they've exhausted those options.
And Layla Bell at NC Child, I wonder what the Annie Casey Foundation found in terms of, is this an acute condition still hung over from the 2008 crisis, or is there a more chronic condition that we're seeing in play here?
Well, we know that poverty rates in general tend to be higher in the southern part of the country, particularly in the southeast. And it's really a reflection of some very deep structural challenges that we face, including kind of this enduring legacy of segregation, as well as the decline in the manufacturing and agricultural sectors, and also the fact that we have some very challenging poverty risk factors that we deal with. For example, the report looks at the percent of children that live in single parent families. And in North Carolina, about 37% of our kids live in single parent families. So these are children who typically have access to fewer economic or emotional resources than children in two parent families. Additionally, when we look at the communities and neighborhoods in which these children live, about 12% of our kids currently live in high-poverty communities, and that's grown more than doubled since the 2000 census. These are communities that don't offer children and families equitable access to resources that can really help them climb the economic ladder, things like high-quality schools, the high concentrations of low-income families, and we know low-income children are just less likely to have access to things like high-quality early education, which really has been shown to help children start school ready to learn and to thrive once they get there. Really robust transportation infrastructure so parents can get themselves over to living wage jobs, and even access to appropriate medical care are all really obstacles that these families are facing.
When you say concentrations, so now we're finding homeless children concentrated, or children in poverty concentrated in high poverty areas. Are those urban areas? Are they rural? Or it doesn't it split that way?
Right. It really depends on, this is measured by the percent of people in poverty in a particular census tract within a county. And so we're seeing about 12% of our kids. What's interesting is some of those kids live at higher ends of the income range, so they may be closer to about twice the poverty line. And yet their outcomes do not do any better than children that are in poverty when you live in these high poverty neighborhoods. And it really does speak to the kind of gaps that exist in the access to opportunity for kids that live in those areas.
We're talking about child poverty in North Carolina on the State of Things. Ryan, let me ask you a question. At Genesis Home and being located here in Durham, what are the resources available? Have they been growing, shrinking? Is it more difficult to work with these families?
I think by and large, the trend is diminishing resources. So, you know, for instance, just at Genesis Home, we really had to sweat out our federal funding this year. For a long, long time, that was something that we, you know, really expected and we didn't have to worry about. I know that a lot of agencies that provide basic services have really had to brace and have had to deal with cuts over the last several years. So more and more is kind of coming back to, you know, each agency's ability to, you know, share a message in the community and engage new support around, you know, from individuals, businesses, and faith communities.
Casey Blake, you were talking about the Hopkins family in Buncombe County. They did end up finding their own house. Tell us some of the barriers and how difficult it was. I mean, the difference between sort of hanging on and remaining in the housed population and climbing back into it once you're out of the system. What were the barriers for them?
Well, they spent over a year searching, and the housing that they ended up finding actually was through a church group who, you know, gave them a deal, waived a credit check. So, you know, they really sort of broke the rules in that way of, you know, the way that most families find housing. You know, his credit, I would say, was their primary barrier. Absolutely. One of his three children had autism, so that, you know, presented a lot of, you know, everything from job searches to even getting out and looking for homes was made, you know, infinitely more difficult, just, you know, having to care for that child constantly. And I believe they were on the list for child care vouchers for over a year. Which is, you know, a problem we're seeing with those long waiting lists all the time. You know, they really lucked out in a way. And I think Shane speaks very eloquently about the fact that, you know, he really isn't the norm in that sense. You know, and the other family we worked with was in a shelter for 9 months and is actually still there today.
Well, give us a sense of to what extent Shane and his had to advocate and his family had to advocate for themselves, and how much support could they find in the community to help them find the help they needed.
Yeah, you know, I think the schools were really their primary resource on that. You know, the just social workers, Luke Keller, who is the homeless student liaison for Buncombe County Schools. You know, he was doing everything from bringing them clothes. You know, he brings diapers to other families, to, you know, making personal phone calls to Evelyn Charities, a local organization. And, you know, I think he connected him with the church group. He connected them with, you know, finding food stamps, found clothes for the kids, you know, vouchers for Christmas presents. And, you know, that on paper, that's really not Luke's job. And that's, you know, not the social worker's job, but they really go above and beyond, obviously, in big ways.
Layla Bell at NC Child, give us the lay of the land in North Carolina in terms of resources. Are they shrinking or are they growing to meet the growing demand? And what about access? How hard is it for families to make their way through the system to get the help they need?
Well, unfortunately, we're seeing a decline in public investments and the very types of resources that can really help mitigate the negative consequences of poverty for children and their families. And that's upsetting, because we know from the research, we have tons of really great and overwhelming evidence what works to help ensure that our children have access to opportunities that really help them move along the developmental pathway towards success. We know that when kids have access to high-quality early education, they start school ready to learn, they perform better when they're there, and they're more likely to graduate. We know that when we have robust system of economic supports for working families, when a family does experience unemployment, they are better able to weather that storm. Unfortunately, we've seen some changes to unemployment insurance in North Carolina that makes that far more difficult, despite the fact that more than a third of our kids are at risk. We know that investments in public health insurance can really help keep our kids healthy, ready to learn, and also ensure that children's parents are healthy and have a good sense of well-being and are adequately prepared to take care of their children. So we've seen tremendous improvements in the percent of children children who have access to health insurance. In fact, more than 80% of our kids have access to health insurance, which is a real positive gain.
Layla, I'm going to have to stop you right there. We're out of time, but I want to thank you. Layla Bell, Research Director at NC Child, Ryan Furman, Executive Director of Genesis Home in Durham, and Casey Blake, a reporter for the Asheville Citizen-Times. Thank you for being on the program. Just ahead, the music of North Carolina's own Catherine Whelan and Justin Robinson. Stay tuned.